Okay, hello everybody, and we've quarter past two, so we'll get started. All I have to do this time is just introduce the new chair of U3A Manoa 2, who's going to introduce the speaker. So, Chris Vanderkrock, over to you.
Thank you.
So welcome to the second talk in the Manoa 2 U3A's 2023 Spring Series, Approaching End of Life. Our speaker today is Dr. Kirsten Holst. Now, like many people in New Zealand, I have a picture of Kirsten with her family on the front cover of a well-used and very battered cookbook written by her mother and published in 1993. And yes, lazy lasagna has become my signature dish. Kirsten, however, followed her father into the medical profession rather than her mother into the culinary arts as a celebrity chef. Kirsten came to Palmerston North in 1989, where she since worked as a geriatrician for Mid-Central Health. She currently works at Star 4 Horowhenua Hospital, a 20-bed rehabilitation ward, offering specialist treatment, rehabilitation, palliative care and medical services to people aged 65 and over. She also does clinics and supports community teams in the Horowhenua area. Kirsten describes herself as a generalist specialist who enjoys working across a range of problems that confront older people. She's our kind of problem. She has a lifestyle, or work style, as she calls it, block, with a few domestic mammals and a whole lot more birds, hens and doves in particular. And she enjoys singing in the choir and sharing food and wine with friends. Kirsten's topic today is on Advanced Care Planning, ACP, which, as I understand it, involves taking charge of our lives, making the best of them despite problems such as declining health. Please welcome Dr. Kirsten Holst.
Opportunity to come and talk to you today. There are some people I know in the audience, which is very anxiety producing for me. Right, I think I'm just going to actually get underway. So, I'm talking about advanced care planning. Now, I think that one of the things about this is it's actually quite a diverse topic. And having an advanced care plan can be quite a simple thing, or it can be quite a complicated thing. And I'm going to talk to you and give you some examples of advanced care plans that various people I know have had and used. And I'm then later on going to just quickly run through one of the bits of paper that you can download from the Advanced Care Planning website, which I'll also give you the details of, and think about some of the things that you might like to consider as far as advanced care planning goes, because I think advanced care planning is something for everyone. And as I've indicated there, it's a process of thinking and talking and reflecting and planning about your own advanced care plans. You might be involved with other people that you love in those advanced care plans as well. But it's also about living and dying well. I think it's more important potentially to be looking at the living bit of it as well. But people often know about advanced care plans around death. And certainly this seminar series that you're running is actually focusing at that sort of sharp end of the death end bit of it, making things better for people around you at the end of life. Now, advanced care planning is a little bit like maps and directions and things like that on the road. I just was flying back into Palmerston North earlier this year, and I flew over what's happening on the Saddle Hill, and you look down and you think, shivers. Or actually, what I thought was shit. What are they doing there? Where are they going? What's actually going to be happening? How are things going to connect up? And, you know, life is a very complicated little process, actually. We don't know. We know what's happened in the past. We can interpret the way we've seen the way that things have happened in the past. We can know some things about the future, but the one thing that we do know about the future is that we're going to die. Okay, this is one of the certainties. And while we can know that that's going to happen, we don't necessarily look forward to it. But you know, we have one shot at it. So it's really good if you can do it well. Okay, and that, as I say, is all about preparation and thinking about things in advance. So I'm not wanting to be sounding like I'm negative. It is a reality that we, as I say, we are all going to die. And if we do some planning beforehand, we can be involved with a good death. Most of the time. Sometimes, you know, things are still really crappy. But you have much more chance of things going well if you do some planning and discussion around that. So, I am a geriatrician. Now that makes, just in itself, is a bit of a way that I think about things in a slightly skewed way for the rest of the world. I'm dealing with people that are unwell a lot of the time. I'm dealing with people who do have a higher chance of having memory problems than the average person might. And I work in a hospital setting, which is as well as working in a community setting. But that means that people are much more likely to be having health problems. So, as I say, my view on life is a little bit skewed. Hopefully your view on life is less skewed because of that. But I'm also a daughter, and I'm feeling very much the issues at the moment of having my parents become significantly older and frailer. Most of you who know my mother's Alison will know that she does have significant dementia at the moment, and she's very, very frail. And I was just up seeing her last week. I don't think that she's really known who I've been for the last couple of years, which is very sad. She knows that she loves me, and that we send love vibes to each other. She doesn't talk very much anymore. But one of the things that was just amazing was when I went to see her just before COVID and our first lockdown. It was at a stage where, as I say again, she didn't actually know me then, so it's just a few years now, isn't it? But I cried at the end of the time that I was talking to her, because I wasn't sure when I was going to see her again, and she put her arms up around me and rubbed my back and patted me. And that was just such a loving experience, and it was very much what I remember of my mum, of her being a very caring person. And I guess, it just is it's a sad state of affairs, but it is the way that it is. And, you know, what my dad and I and my brother and the rest of our great family want to do is we want mum to have a really good quality of life. Now, so we talked about some advanced care plans with her, and I will talk a little bit about some of those things in a minute, because I think that stories about these things just remind you about why these things are good to have happen. But I'm also a widow. I lost my darling John about the same time my mum went into care, actually. And John actually had a really good death. And that was partly because we had done some advanced care planning. So this is one of the reasons why I think it's a really important thing to talk about, and why I'm going to share some of these things with you. Okay. Now, as I say, I'm sorry that I'm a geriatrician and work in a hospital setting. And that I don't concentrate so much on the green box of these things at the moment. In fact, that's what I talked about last time when I was here, which, as you can see, I've got all this extensive thing to try and cover with things. But, you know, when we're talking about advanced care planning, we are talking a little bit about the things about trying to stay healthy. But mostly we're talking about, getting better from illnesses and things, or talking about how we're going to be living with chronic conditions or chronic problems. And then at some point, we will be thinking about how we cope with things at the end of life. And advanced care planning really is for the blue, the pink, and the orange boxes there, and it will be different for different people. Okay. So sometimes things are really very straightforward. You have two directions or decisions, things that you can make. Now, I had some significant health problems when I was in my early 20s, which, to my alarm, is a very long time ago now. And I had ulcerative colitis. Now, this was a familial condition in my case. My mother's mother and my father's father both had ulcerative colitis, and in their 50s and 60s, they had significant surgery. They had their bowel removed, ending up with a bag on their tummies, and they lived full lives with that. That was something that I had always known. But when I became unwell with colitis when I was in my early 20s, it was a bit of a shock. And I made some decisions around that time. So I ended up, I had a significant period of time in hospital. I didn't get better. I ended up having surgery, so I also had, and I lost me a bag on my tummy. But I am, in fact, very well as far as my colitis goes. In fact, I have no colitis because I have no colon anymore. It's all gone. Bye-bye colon. but it was, as I said, it was, you know, simple. It was yes, surgery, have it all gone. No, I could have made some other choices. And in fact, you know, I was, quite a lot of pressure was put on me at the time, but I didn't really have another choice because otherwise I was going to die if I didn't choose to have surgery at that stage. So it was a really simple, you know, and in fact it was quite a simple choice. I had a two-year-old daughter at the time. I wasn't about to say goodbye to the world on that one. And, you know, it influenced a couple of other things around my views about advanced care planning. And for at the moment, I don't actually have a lot of other health problems other than I'm overweight and my ankles swell by the end of the day and things like that. You know, not major health problems that are, I see as life-limiting problems at the moment. But one of the things that happened during that hospital stay is I had a nasogastric tumour. So a tube that went through my nose, down into my stomach, and it was feeding me. And I hated it. It was a truly unpleasant experience. And I really didn't like that. And so one of the things that I have made very clear to my family is that if I am in a situation in the future where I had difficulty managing my oral intake, I really am not very keen on having a nasogastric tumour. And my family know that as far as some advanced care planning goes. And I guess that I want to just put a little bit here, which is important about advanced care planning, is that, you know, I could actually change my mind about that. So I'm at the period of time in my life that my children might have children. I might be going to be a grandma, and I'm pretty excited about that. And so if something happened to me at the moment, and I couldn't swallow for some reason, you know, I might actually choose to have a tube in sometimes, or I would consider it in a different way. I just think that that's an important thing within the advanced care planning situation, that it's not, you're not taking away options most of the time. Okay, so I think that that's an important thing to have or be aware of. So I like graphs, and I struggle to try and find graphs that I think that people will understand in the same way that I do. So you're going to get several graphs of the same sorts of things, maybe depicted in slightly different ways. So that if we talk about our functional capacity, so our ability to do things, that's on the axis going up and down, and we're talking about time coming across this way. And there is a period of time where, and this is actually looking it's looking at things fairly generically, but it could be looking at something, say, like muscle mass and strength. and that there will be a period of time, and that we might meet your threshold, so that maybe it's in your early 20s that you meet your maximum body mass muscle strength threshold, and then things will actually drop down. Now, some people may end up having more problems than others because they lose muscle mass earlier. You know, one of the things is that my muscle mass might not have got up as far as the green line because I had high doses of steroids when my colitis was bad. So maybe I'm on the orange line, but maybe I've cruised along sort of slightly nearer to the green line with things then. Okay? So that it's, you know, what we would like to do, I think, well, most people, the way most people describe it to me, that they like to do is that they like to get up to as high as they can on this graph, on the green line. They'd like to stay up there as long as they can. And then, because we're all going to die, you're actually going to, there is going to be a drop-off point at some stage. We'd like that often to be quite quick at the end. We'd like to go not necessarily being a burden, not having lots of trouble. But in fact, we don't get to choose some of those things. And as I say, that's where I think advanced care planning comes in around that. Now, having had my very easy 1-2 directions, I mean, in fact, a lot of my life is much more like this sort of road where things go round and round and things at different stages. And, you know, I might think that this is a little bit like my mum's journey sometimes, that things sometimes go backwards, they go say round and round. Now, when we had some discussions when she was well, we were having discussions about what would happen at the beginning of her retirement, what was going to happen later on. We talked about this, and one of the things that we said was that she said, well, what would I do if your father wasn't around? I said, well, you know, one of the things that you could do if Dad wasn't around is you could come and live with me. We're going to build a new house, and we'll build a wing on the house, and you can come and live in the house with us. And that was us at that stage, that was Don and I. And we talked about that, and Mum thought about this for a while, and driving along, and she said, well, you know, that's very nice. But if that didn't work, I could actually go and stay in that place. And what she pointed to was a rest home. And, you know, that was, from my point of view now, was a very loving thing for her to have said to me. You know, if it was going to be difficult, if we couldn't manage, she could actually cope with the idea of living in a rest home. And it's not necessarily, as I say, what everyone wants. You don't want that to necessarily be what happens, but there might be a time when you do think that that's necessary. So that was one of the things. Then we were talking about funerals, because that was in part of the conversation. And she said, well, you know, I think it's really awful to have pay a lot for a coffin and then have it burnt because I want to be cremated. She said, I want to be in a cardboard box. Right. So we had a bit of a discussion about the cardboard boxes, and it could be quite a nice cardboard box, she thought. And it would paint on the outside of it. And she said, well, could she help us paint? And I said, well, then we have to work out something to store it, and we do have a bit of a crisis with storage sometimes. So we didn't do that. We didn't end up painting a box. And then she said, but I do want it to be quite a strong cardboard box. I don't want the bottom to fall out. So, you know, while it was, you know, it was a slightly sobering conversation, it was funny as well. We had a nice time talking about that. And last week when I was up with her and I was with my dad, and she's very, very frail, and she's a high falls risk now. And we talked about the fact that if she fell and broke her hip, commonish thing that can happen if people fall, she is so frail that she wouldn't actually do very well having an operation or anything like that. And we had some discussions about it, and she's just recently moved between one of the wings of the rest home. She was in what's called psychogeriatric continuing care, which is where you get to be if you're quite challenging to look after. And she's graduated down just to hospital level care now. And it's in the same facility, a lot of the same staff move between the units and things like that. A lot of similarities. But she was really very unsettled with that move. And it took maybe a week, 10 days, for her to begin to smile again. after she had that move. And so Dad and I had a discussion, we were talking around that, and we said, actually, you know, if she was to break her hip, you know, an operation will almost certainly kill her. Why don't we think about saying, rather than going to the hospital in another environment, another horrible environment that she'll be upset by, why don't we think about her staying at her rest home, involving the hospice in her care there, and allowing her to die with the people she knows around her. And then we had a bit of a discussion. We thought, well, maybe we could actually manage her even at home in that setting, if it was going to be for a limited period of time. And so we've opened up a whole new door in that discussion, which I just think is was interesting. And while Dad and I cried while we talked about it, we both came away saying, actually, it's really good that we know what the other person's view is, and we'll be able to be upfront when we get a phone call to say that she's had a fall and a probably broken hip. That's not going to be such a bad thing to hear about now that we know what our plan is for that. And I think that, as I say, that's, again, a really good reason for going ahead with some advanced care planning. Now, it's tricky because that isn't necessarily the sort of advanced care planning that I'm going to be encouraging you to be doing today, because I'm encouraging you to be doing advanced care planning for yourselves. But I think that it's still a valid thing to be saying that, to make a plan in that setting. Now, this is my darling. This was before he got unwell, and we were in London. So, great map of the street map behind him. London is very complicated when you look at a street map like that. At that stage, we didn't know that we were going to go on a journey with his health. And certainly, if anyone had asked me what the journey that we were going to be on, or some of the points on that journey, I wouldn't have had any idea, even though, you know, I have quite an intimate knowledge of the healthcare system. So John developed kidney pain. And in fact, he blocked off his tube from his kidney down to his bladder. And eventually, that was found to be from prostate cancer. And the prostate cancer had spread was quite widespread through his bones by the time it was found. So that was metastatic disease. We knew that he wasn't going to get better from that, but we were looking at a life-limiting condition. It was certainly something that could be controlled. And we went ahead and had discussions with the oncologists, the cancer doctors, and he went forward and had some very aggressive chemotherapy at the time, which seemed like the appropriate thing to do. And we were happy with that decision. But it was quite hard work. And he became quite frail as a result of that treatment. And that was okay in lots of ways. We got through the sessions of chemotherapy. There were 6 months of that. We were just really, really pleased when you get to the end of it. We went away on a camper van holiday. We thought about going away to Europe, but the oncologist looked very disheartened with that prospect, and we decided camper van around South Island. So we did that. And each night when we were on our camper van holiday, we took time to sit and talk about our lives. And we had a book that was actually from the hospice that was about writing your autobiography. And so we sat and we did that, and we talked about our childhoods and family members that weren't around any longer. We had a great time. So that was each night. I'd have a wine, he'd have a whiskey. We'd sit and have our discussion. And I did writing because I had better writing than he did, which some people might be surprised to hear. it was a really pleasant experience for us doing that. We came back, and about a year later, he fell over and broke his hip with his frailty. And we had some more discussions at that stage because it looked like his prostate cancer might be becoming active again. And he said, well, you know, I'm certainly not going to do any chemotherapy or anything like that again. I'm going to put some limits in about what we do. we're accepting that this is, as we did the first time around, that this could be a life-limiting problem. And that was fine. But he didn't want, except things we talked about, the fact that what he really wanted to do was to get home, back to our property, be at home with me. And that was great. And so he got home, and the All Blacks were playing. The weekend we had one of my stepdaughters was down visiting us, and John had a stroke that was really very profound. That left him without speech, which when you live with me all the time must be really quite tricky for him. And having had the conversations that we had in the camper van, and having had the conversations that we'd had after he'd broken his hip, I was able to then speak for him and say, actually, I don't think this is something that he wants. And he would then say, he could say yes and no. Sometimes it wasn't always reliable, but he would say yes, 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 yes. And I'd say, because he didn't want to have something done. And yes, 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 he wanted to get home. And so we managed that, and we managed what was a tricky situation. He didn't actually want to have caregivers coming in. I said, yes, 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 caregivers were going to have to come in if we were going to get home again, because I couldn't do this on my own. But we were able to weigh up things. And as I say, I was doing that very much based on these lovely, lovely conversations that we'd had. I got the book out again, and we'd sit and look at it together. And it was just, it was really good. And, yeah, then after about 18 months, the prostate cancer really, really ramped up again. And I was able to say, actually, I don't want to be at work at the moment, but this is coming up to the end of life. You know, what's really important is for us to spend as much time together as we can. And I took time off. And I was given 3 months off. And so John was had been a lawyer, and he liked that it was 12 weeks. And so he died in week 11 of that, and made the most of it. At our time, and we, until week 10, we were going out and having lunch out and things like that. We were able to manage that. When we worked out that we could only maybe do one thing a day, we prioritised that we were going to do the fun things, and I wasn't going to do the housework and the boring things. We were going to make the most of that time together. And John died, as he would have loved to have been, and the centre of attention with all our children in the room. Lots and lots of people there, people singing, music playing, in our bed. And that was the way that he wanted to go. And as I say, I was able to honour that. Now, I just have to let you know that we had never written, other than the stuff I wrote down in the camper van book, this wasn't a big plan that we'd written down, but I was able to honour his views because we'd talked about it. And I was his enduring power of attorney, so just having had that talk last week, I was his enduring power of attorney, so people listened to me, which was really great. And we had a great team. And, you know, within that team, I talked with our GP, with the hospice team, and we were able to work things out together in that setting. So, having looked at that map of London, this is an even worse map of London, okay? So this is just thinking about how complicated it can be when you try and think about how things will be if you don't know what your journey is going to be like. That is the situation that most of you were in, and then, as I say, you're going to go back to some really quite simple decisions and discussion points in that setting. This is just a reminder that as we are getting older, that we're gathering burdens or problems, and and amongst other things, it might mean that you're going to require more help in the future. And I think that it's saying I'm never going to go into rest home care, or I'm never going to go to hospital or something like that, those can be quite tricky decisions for the rest of your family. You really need to have quite a lot of support for some of those things to be occurring. And, that can simplify a picture down. So we had our previous map. This has been simplified down to things that we might be able to make some slightly easier plans about. Okay, but they don't happen without having some discussions. So, why do an advanced care plan? Well, I've hopefully told you this couple of the stories that I've shared at the moment, that there are advantages in your experiences of bad times. If you have some of these discussions and things like that, it makes it easier. You're sharing your worries, sharing the burdens. It makes a big difference if you know what people want to have at a funeral, because, you know, when somebody dies, shivers, it's, you know, your world is just all of a sudden falling apart. Do you want to be having to make a plan? You know, somebody can tell you that the plan. So John wanted a jazz band playing. That turned out to be quite slightly more complicated, but I did as best I could in organising somebody to play jazz at his funeral and things. And he had told me the way he wanted songs played. We had songs that we really liked together. He had said he wanted a cardboard box as well. Then I went to try and find cardboard boxes. They were awful. and then somebody said that they knew somebody who was milling trees on their property, and they could do a simple coffin. That was I felt met his needs better than the cardboard box options that I was offered. Also, a less expensive price. It's very expensive cardboard boxes. Okay. So, just as I said, this is another of my many graphs of trying to think about the way that people might live. So, on this axis again, this is your fortitude, your function. So, we've not got the childhood bits on here. We're talking about having reached our peaks and where are we going. So, and as I say, a lot of people say that they'd like to be going along and then have things deteriorate quite quickly. And some people say that, you know, they'd like to be hit by a bus or drop dead with their heart attack and things like that. That's often really good for the person who's dying, but it's actually quite hard sometimes on the people who are left behind. And you might not have got round to having some of those conversations about the cardboard box or otherwise of how you want things to go. This line here is, you know, really talking about a lot of the chronic problems that people have. So that might be somebody with COPD or asthma, and these dips would be maybe when you have an exacerbation or pneumonia and you end up in hospital. Things go down, go up again, maybe not quite up to the same level that you were at before. It could be something like heart failure. And there will be a dip down where you, in fact, don't get better again, as well as a likely thing that occurs in that. And, you know, things going up and down, they say that it's a dementia trend trajectory. I often say it's actually a neurological degenerative condition. So that could be something like Parkinson's disease, and it may not be all as low on the graph as that for people with things. So that things going up and down and being problematic. And what I quite like about this is that there's also an issue of where you're becoming more dependent, sort of put in on that. So, to say that there are reasons for thinking about when you might do advanced care plans. So hopefully, so we're on this one and we can do some pretty basic planning. We might know a little bit more because we're on the blue line. We might have bad spells and get better. And there'll be times that we make decisions about doing things like advanced care planning or have some discussions around our advanced care plans. This is just another graph of another particular problem. So this is about looking at COPD, or chronic airflow obstruction. And there are a number of things put on the graphs suggesting that, you know, if you Oops, sorry, fat fingers. If you smoke and you're susceptible to the effects of smoke, your lung function is going to deteriorate at a faster rate. Stopping smoking, it then becomes parallel to the higher levels, and that's depending on what age you decide you're going to stop smoking. But what this area here might be with onset of symptoms is saying that you're going to get breathless when you're doing things. That's going to limit what you're able to do. Maybe severe disability is going to be when you're breathless, even sitting at rest without having to do very much. Okay, so it can be important to begin to think, okay, well, when I'm having some of these problems, you know, is that a good time? Sorry, to start thinking about doing some advanced care planning as well. And, you know, your doctors or healthcare professionals, well, they'll know a little bit more about this. One of the problems is that, you know, we don't want to be the pessimists all the time, so, you know, and we're looking at people being better. So your doctor, in fact, may not bring these things up with you, but as your symptoms are changing, you might want to say, actually, is this an indication that things are getting worse? Am I likely to be going to die soon? You know, that's a perfectly reasonable question. And, you know, your doctor might actually be able to say yes to that answer. You know, that yes, there are some things that are suggesting that things are not going so well and you may be going to die. And, you know, that will be a goodly prompt for maybe doing some more planning. And this is a particularly nasty condition. This is Huntington's disease, a graph of that. But it's just, I think that I reflect on that. You know, that there are problems that occur. Huntington's disease is a genetic condition. You've got a 1 in 2 chance of developing Huntington's disease if you have a parent who's got Huntington's disease. One of the things about it is it's difficult to tell how things are going to develop. But if you inherit it from your father, it's likely to be a more severe problem than if you inherit it from your mother. And that there are a number of symptoms that are associated with it. So that there are motor symptoms. People have, they can develop movement disorders of their limbs. They can look like they're drunk when they're walking because their balance is affected and things like that. They can have memory problems and they can have psychiatric problems that are all separate and will develop in different ways. And, you know, this is just saying, okay, well, the cognitive things that they're all just happening at the end here. Motor symptoms, we noticed that there's some beginning, things beginning to happen, but they're going to get more severe out here. The psychiatric symptoms, you know, they might come on at a different stage in the process. So, you know, we need to have discussions with health professionals and, you know, inform ourselves about how things might be going to be in those settings. Okay, and as I say, this is that sort of graph again of how things might change. And I guess that, as I say, with Huntington's, because it's a familial problem, you may well have experienced what, you know, your mum or dad had. It's a good reason to do some planning. I think that I've shown that one before. So when should you start thinking about advanced care planning? I think, hopefully, I've explained that you can start at any time. Okay? And it will be different as you start at those times. And it can be an ongoing process that you're going to add to with time. So becoming unwell with a chronic condition, surgery, you know, something you see somebody else having some problems and you think, oh, yeah, maybe I need to think about these things. Well, you might be thinking about it actually only when you're thinking, actually, I am in the dying process now. So do I want to share my views? This is just a list of saying that, you know, you will be thinking about something different things at different times of your life if you're quite well. It's more about, you know, the things that give you value. that give value to your life. You'll want to share those things. As I say, when John and I were having our drink at night and discussing what we thought, well, loving memories from the past, that was sharing our values about things, about the games we'd played, the people we knew, the interactions we'd had. You know, thinking about what makes your day meaningful, and as I say, you know, John was very clear being able to say he really wanted to be at home, if we could do that. We had to have a discussion around that over watershed. His late wife had another nasty neurological problem called multicystic atrophy. And when they had their discussions about things, she didn't want to die at home because she didn't want John to be left with that worry about that she had died in the house. That was a different way from the way that John and I felt about it, that I was very happy to sleep in the same bed that he died in. You know, that to me was completing and nice, whereas it might be revolting to other people. So it's really important to get you know, some of those things right. If you're unwell, you might begin to think about slightly different things, having discussions about different things. Which, as I say, will also may include about how you feel about things. You know, sharing emotions and feelings about things is really important. It helps decrease the stress on other people if they know that you're feeling comfortable about things. When we were talking about the situation with the pandemic, you know, things were different in that situation. And, you know, it was horrible that people died on their own. But, you know, can we get our heads around some of those things so that, we make different ways of dealing with it. You know, being much more specific when we're nearer the end of life. Okay, so what I'm just going to run through now is just some of the forms that are available online. You can save them. You can save them on your computer, or you can print them out. And this is from the website. And if you just Google Advanced Care Plan NZ, you will get through to this site, but I'll give you the more direct websites later on. We've moved from having stones and dead leaves to godwits, which is very nice, I think. So, now what matters to me? These are starting off, sorry, question one is just about filling in your demographics and things like that. Question two, what matters to me? You know, what do I want people to remember about me? And what are things, let's say, that give value to my life and would give value to my death as well? How can we put those things together? And some of these things, you know, are easy to answer, and some of them are actually quite hard. One of the things that I've done as I've sat and gone through these questions, it takes a bit of time thinking about it, and it's I have to say it's quite hard when you're doing it without talking to somebody else about it. It's a useful thing to actually gather together and do some talking and thinking about these things. You know, what things might worry you? What am I worrying about my loved ones, what people am I leaving behind? What does suffering mean to me? What do I think is awful? To say suffering, you know, I really didn't like the idea of an gastric tube again. You know, what things would I put into the mix if I was thinking about that? If, as I say, if I had a pregnant daughter or something like that at the moment, what would I consider the way that things work? How does being able to talk or communicate make a difference? And, you know, my views about this changed very significantly when John had his stroke. So his ability to talk, I would have thought, you know, could have been a terrible, terrible thing, and life wouldn't be worth living. In fact, we worked out really good ways of communicating, and it wasn't a problem. So, you know, we have to add those things in. So thinking about some of those things and sharing that information. Okay. Okay, sorry, the writing got very small and I tried to put more stuff on a page. You know, why am I making an advanced care plan at this stage? What might be going to happen? What do I think about in the future? You know, particularly if it's a problem with my health at the moment, what things am I worrying about, and what don't I want to have happen? Okay, this is a series of questions that talk about to give you a range where you can put your answers. About how much do you want to know? What do you want the doctor to tell you? This is really useful information to tell the doctor as well. You know, I want to know everything, or I actually don't want to know very much. You know, where am I on that spectrum? And what do I feel about the doctor sharing that information with other people around me? So just saying, you know, do we go with the doctor's decision? I just have to let you know that doctors will offer you treatment they wouldn't want themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one of the things that's really very sad and important. We do that because we feel a little bit defensive about things, but, you know, and you can't just assume that they're going to offer you what they would want themselves. So you can say, actually, I want what you would want. You better tell me what that is. If I had an illness that was going to shorten my life, do I want to know how long I've got to live? It becomes much more obvious that you're getting near the end of life the nearer the end of life you get. I'm often asked about how long do people think, or do I think that a person has? And, you know, the best I can do usually is say I think it's going to be years, months to years, weeks to months, days to weeks, hours, minutes. You know, sharing that information, and that's me making a best guess, and it's you know, I have to tell people that that's just my best guess. I'm not God, surprisingly. I'm just making a guess about some of these things. And as I say, some information about sharing information with your family as well. How do you feel about that? You talked about enduring powers of attorney last week. An enduring power of attorney is important, particularly if you've actually talked to your enduring power of attorney person about some of these things that are important to you, so that they can be your advocate for your views. It's not just about having an enduring power of attorney, it's about knowing that. And I just have to let you know that my aunt recently asked if I could be her enduring power of attorney. And I said, I thought that was fine. I said, we'd better talk about some of these things then. And I said, well, you know, we'll start with the far end. You know, what do you want to have happen when you die? My aunt lives in London at the moment. And she said, well, when I die, I want my heart cut out. I want to put into a jar of pickled in a jar of white rum. And I want it to sit on the mantelpiece. And I want my husband's heart to sit next to it. Well, it turned out she hadn't told her husband that either. And he just about fell off his chair. She described that. But, you know, it started quite a good little conversation. And, you know, in the end, we've decided that I can have her cremated and put in a heart-shaped urn, and it can sit on my head. Because that wasn't quite in my, it wasn't in my list of things that I thought that I could manage. I'm sorry. So an enduring power of attorney who knows what your wishes are, you know, that's pretty good. Having an advanced care plan with advanced directives in it is also really, really good. Otherwise, as you come down the hierarchy of things, it gets the actual legal responsibility, if you don't have those things in place, it gets left to the doctor, who we've already discussed won't necessarily do things that are best for you or the things that they want done for them. So get these things in place. Things about what's important when I'm dying. You know, these aren't the only things that you might be wanting to consider. They're just some of the slightly more more common things that come up. You know, that you can say, you know, you want people with you. These are the people you would like at the bedside. These are the people you don't want at the bedside. You don't want any fighting, please. You know, take out tubes that don't add to my comfort. Stop medicines and treatments that don't add to my comfort. Attend to your cultural, religious and spiritual needs as you described earlier. You know, what is things that mean quality of life to you? This is just, there is an important bit here, so that you may say that you want to have everything done, you know, as a view around things. But it is important that if you're seriously ill or not able to make decisions for yourself, you can talk about the plan that you would like, but in fact, that might not be able to happen. And, you know, writing it all down doesn't mean actually that the doctors, you know, that it may just not be possible that they can do that. Okay? And then this is just another of the things to think about, because a lot of people say to me, you know, I don't want to be resuscitated, I don't want CPR, my heart needs to stop. You know, there's a spectrum of things there as well. You know, that you do want, you might want good healthcare, but just not have your heart, to try and restart your heart. Okay. And then that there are some things that you can talk about, which are parts of an advanced care plan that are much, much more specific. And they can be around what we call an advanced directive. The thing that's complicated about an advanced directive is it has to be, you know, every little bit has to be, you know, in this situation, when the sun is rising in, I don't know, some position in the sky, da 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 da, it feels a little bit like, you know, that there are a whole lot of things that this is what I want to have happen in this particular situation. And it can be very complicated. And that's the only thing that is sort of really overarching the decision that somebody else can make for you, who might be your enduring power of attorney. Maybe, but an enduring power of attorney can't necessarily have life-preserving cares withheld. They also can't agree to you for you to have euthanasia or anything like that. And this isn't going to allow you to necessarily go ahead and have euthanasia either, because you have to still be in a situation where you can make a fully informed decision if you're having euthanasia. And in an advanced care plan, talking about it, you're not able to make and communicate those decisions. Okay, and this is just some of the bits that maybe make things feel, put things on legal. So, when I was thinking about my road signs and things like that, I was thinking, you know, sometimes, you know, it's all in another language. and, you know, that's one of the things that makes things complicated. This is why it can be really useful to talk about things with a health professional, because they can help with some of the bits around the other language. It still might mean that there's no actual easy answer. And then in an advanced care plan, you have the opportunity of being able to put some of the things in the back of your funeral as well. That's just a good place for some of those things. But there are other ways of doing that too. So I'm going to just give you my very quick important points. Talking about death doesn't mean it make it any more likely to happen. Okay, it's going to happen. We're not making it any more likely to happen. What you will be able to do by having discussions about your health is improve your health journey. Even little bits of conversations can be really helpful because we don't know what's in our future. I've talked about the fact that as providing you're remaining competent, you can continue to make decisions or modifications to your advanced care plan. It doesn't necessarily need to be written down, but that can stop fights occurring if you've done some of those things. And the spectrum for it to be general plans through to advanced directives. What we recognise is autonomy is important. Autonomy is your ability to maintain yourself. I talked about the fact that doctors will offer treatment sometimes that they wouldn't themselves want to have. That's partly because we're in this defensive situation. While an advanced directive requires you to be competent at the time, you don't actually, you can have memory problems and contribute to an advanced care plan. And I just put there the bits that, you know, it's very tricky around advanced directives. And people often, I mean, the most common thing that people say to me about advanced directives, I'm sorry, about assisted dying, is that if I get dementia, will you help me die? And, you know, at the moment, our legislation doesn't allow for that. So your enduring power of attorney can't consent to things. They can't consent to neurosurgery. They can't consent to you to get married. And their life-sustaining treatments, that they can't make far-left decisions for you. And just reminding you that healthcare officials don't have to offer you treatments that you won't benefit from. And that's looking up, if you Google Advanced Care Plan in New Zealand or myacp.org.nz, those forms are all there. It's a complicated little journey.
Yeah. Okay, that's deafening silence to speak, was stunned by all these things that we should be thinking about. I'm really pleased actually that you had all those points to discuss, because at the first seminar, one thing we thought we were planning this, and just in discussion with people, a number of things that came up that we wouldn't have thought about in relation to end of life. And I said, well, would people be interested if we had a U3A group, or what, you know, six or eight people meeting once a month, just to discuss a range of things? And I thought, well, what sort of things to discuss? You had a whole list of questions there that we could throw out. Things that, certainly for me, things that I know I should be thinking about, but I simply haven't. And the idea of what the options are and what you do. So that's some fascinating stuff that will be very useful. Now, we're going to have a short break for tea, coffee, biscuits and so on, which will be in the next room. If you have any questions now, you can grab a piece of paper from the desk just by the entrance to write a question down.
Difficult questions.
Or you'll get some real challenging ones, probably. These are retired academics. You know. But... and then we'll come back, question and answer session, and roving mic. So you know, hang around, don't disappear, because often the questions are some of the best parts to hear the talk. Okay, thank you.